Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of the Yard. You know, in the summertime, it feels like every day is the same. You know what I mean? We went through some of that, like, calendar-type cacophony during COVID. You pardon the alliteration there, where every day was just kind of the same. You know, there wasn't a lot of structure. And you get in the summer, at least for me, there's no baseball schedule. Right, there's no football availability, you know, because when we get into football season, it's very regimented, right? You know, you get Levy on Mondays, you get, you know, either offensive players Tuesday, defensive players Wednesday, Thursday, you JUCO day if you want to go cover a game, Friday a high school game and travel, and then there's a football game, and then you do all your Sunday morning quarterback, and then you start the process all over again. And for a guy like me that likes routine, it's good. But this time of year, you know, some days I don't know what time it is. I don't know where my glasses are. I mean, it's just one of those things that happens, you know. But I'm kind of enjoying the fact that I don't have anywhere to be, because for 13 straight days I had somewhere to be, and that included some pretty long trips. But here we are, back with you, our friends, on the Boneyard. We'd like to offer our most sincere congratulations to Logan Cook, former Mississippi State football player and a native of my hometown, Columbia, Mississippi. I was born in Canton, but raised in Columbia. And, first interview he ever did was with yours truly. Drove down to Columbia and interviewed him. They had a white backdrop set up, and they put him in a white jersey. I'm not sure why, but they did. And that's back when we were still with Fox. Yes, it was called Fox Next. We tried that for a little while, didn't work. But nevertheless, I've known Logan Cook's family most of my life. His grandfather, Brother Cook, was the pastor at North Columbia Baptist Church for decades. And Lynn Cook, his dad, was best friends with Byron Clinton. Byron Clinton dated Patty Abernathy, who was the sister of my fifth grade best friend, Richard Abernathy. I don't know what any of those people are doing these days except for Lynn. But because Lynn and Byron were best friends, they'd come over and hang with Patty, and Richard and I sometimes would get out and play some football with those guys in the backyard, even though they were much older than us. And so that's all part of the deal. And it's interesting, you know, to think that somebody that I'm connected to now is a multimillionaire. And terms of the deal not fully disclosed, but we are informed that Logan Cook is now the highest paid punter in the history of the National Football League. I'm beginning to wonder if he won't be our first Pro Football Hall of Famer. That's crazy to think about, right? But Logan Cook, at this point in his career, has the longest net punting average of anybody in the history of the game of football. It's ridiculous, man. And he was one of ours. He grew up a Bulldog. There was really not any doubt where he was going to go. Once he was given the opportunity, he jumped right on it. And was part of that team that took us to number one in the country. You remember, he had the fake punt against Auburn. The ill-advised fake punt, I might add, Dan Mullen. You got the game in hand. I don't know why you're getting cute. But nevertheless, it's a great day. And super, super proud for him. There's been so many players from the Dan Mullen era that have gone on to NFL millions that have made us awfully proud as Bulldogs. And so want to give a shout out to Logan and his family, and so incredibly proud of him. And I can assure you this, nobody is more grateful for this than Logan Cook. Nobody. Now, there may be some as grateful, but I can assure you nobody is more grateful than him, knowing that family and how he was raised there in small town Mississippi. Man, he grew up on Ward's Hamburgers, baby. You know, he understands it, and I can tell you he is a guy that's, I believe his third son is on the way. As you start thinking about that aspect of it, too, I mean, you know, we get some of these NFL players start having some football prospects of their own. Maybe that bodes well for the future of Mississippi State football. Logan, if you're listening, we love you. We're proud of you. And let's coach those boys up and see if we can't go to number one again. How about that? Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company, too, because they take care of us. It doesn't matter if it's a lunch out with work colleagues, a night out with friends or family. They have what it takes to make your meal an adventure, right? And I don't just eat for nourishment. I eat for enjoyment, and I enjoy eating at Bulldog Burger Company. I love the spring rolls. Sometimes I change it up. Like if I'm feeling super cute, maybe I don't get the spring rolls. Maybe I get the wings. Sometimes when I got Ian with me, we get the dill pickles. Yeah, he's up there a lot too because he works there. But I love it, man. And I love being able to get the pimentology. I add bacon more times than not. Sometimes I get the BLT salad. I like it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging. You know, eat what you want. When I just want a nice lunch portion, I get the Sloppy Joe sliders. So many great options to choose from. It's not just a burger joint, but you go there really primarily for the hamburgers. Yeah, full service bar there too. So if you need an adult beverage, you can enjoy one of those too. Maybe a nice glass of wine or a cold brew after a long day's work. They can accommodate you with that. But get that chocolate shake to go. Maybe not after you've had a couple of beers, but after polishing off a great restaurant quality hamburger and all the trimmings, get that chocolate shake to go. You'll be glad you did. Ride that ride home with a smile. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, there has been a little activity in the portal since we have been together. And I had a couple of you message me, you know, about the guys that have come, that are incoming traffic. Steve, you didn't give us a lot of information about those guys. We'll take a segment today and kind of talk about what those guys have done and kind of what I project them to be. Yeah, we've had some more outgoing traffic. And again, just to kind of update here, because I don't want to take anything for granted. I know some of you kind of skip episodes and get caught up a little bit later. But here are the current transfer outs in order of them entering the portal. Pitcher Gavin Black, outfielder Landis Davila, shortstop Dylan Cup, pitcher Wes Pritchard. Got a really nice message from his mom the other day about some things that I'd said on Facebook when somebody was trying to be critical of him, and I appreciate that. I didn't do it for that reason. I did it because this is a young man that has battled through some injury a little bit, and we kind of keep that stuff quiet, you know. But you didn't see the best version of Wes Pritchard. Let me just tell you that. Mekhi Grant. No real surprise there. Michael O'Brien, of course. Nolan Stevens is now announced for Oklahoma. His brother played there. Luke Dotson. And real quickly about Dotson, too. I'm told there is a possibility he may come back. There's also a possibility he may be drafted. You know, we'll see what happens. Catcher Jackson Owen, pitcher Robert Fortenberry, pitcher Kevin Minnell has now inked with Nebraska. Super excited for him. Kevin Minnell, great guy. You didn't get a chance to know him much. I don't even think we ever had him in post-game media the entire season. But a super nice guy, man. Happy for him. You know, he's up there from Kansas. It'll make it easier on his family to kind of go and watch him play. And a chance again to play, you know, Power 5 baseball. So now he's been Kansas State, junior college, Mississippi State, and now Nebraska. The guy's got some talent. Catcher Steven Spiletta, catcher Ross Highfield. Shortstop Lucas Buckner, really like him. He's a dirtbag, man. I mean that in the most affectionate way possible. Coach's kid, not afraid to get out there and get dirty. Makes a lot of the difficult plays look easy. And maybe he's a little bit limited range-wise, but I'll tell you, man, anything that he can get to, you got a good chance of getting out. Today we learned Bradley Lofton goes into the portal. Now, you may remember Bradley Lofton turned down some big bucks to come to Mississippi State back in the class of 2022. Got off to kind of a decent start. Walks are a bit of an issue. He was one of those guys that would walk the bases loaded and didn't strike out the side, you know. Walks were much better in year two, but he only made three appearances last year. The issue with Bradley has just simply been he has not been able to get and stay healthy. That guy is super talented. When he signed and elected not to go in the draft, and he turned down some big bucks to come here, we thought, you know what, this is going to be probably a Sunday guy as a freshman. And certainly by year two, he'd be a weekend guy. But we felt like he would be a future Friday night guy. It just hadn't come together. It's not a matter of effort, and it's not a matter of talent. He's just had some things happen that have just kind of sidelined him a little bit. So we wish him the best, man. We do. We wish him the best as he kind of moves forward with this. He's actually draft eligible. You never know. Somebody may take a swing on him late. I don't know who his reps are, but this is a guy that don't be surprised you look up 3 years down the road and he's like the AAA pitcher of the year. This guy's really, really talented. Unfortunately, it just never came together for him here. I'm a firm believer in that, you know, God has a plan. And so whatever that plan is for young Bradley Lofton, we hope that he seeks it earnestly and finds it and finds a great level of success, just not against us. But I'll be pulling for him. He's an interesting kid. He is. He is an interesting guy, and I hate to call him a kid. I mean, you know, he's, goodness, almost 21 years of age. But, yeah, he's an interesting guy. He really is. And I think he's a guy with finds the right program and he's healthy. He's going to get it, put it together. I think if you're Brian O'Connor, you probably just can't take that risk, right? You're a brand new coach. You don't have any emotional investment into the kid. And so you're just thinking, you know what? This is a guy that didn't even pitch last year for Mississippi State. I need that roster spot for somebody that I know that can. And so maybe the risk reward was just something that O'Connor had to look at. But again, we wish Bradley and his family the absolute best. And we talk about it all the time, man. You know, when you have guys that are Bulldogs, you want them to be Bulldogs, right? They may grow up Bulldogs, come into games at Duty Noble Field and Davis Wade Stadium, and you hope when they get the opportunity to take the field in maroon and white that they accept it. Well, Bradley did, and it just didn't work out. It's nobody's fault. It's not his fault. It's not our fault. You know, it just didn't work out, and sometimes that happens in life. But I can tell you, as far as everybody here at the Boneyard, we're pulling for Bradley Lofton. We're pulling for all these young men. We really are. You can work through that list, and you can see that, you know, many of these guys were highly recruited and highly regarded when they first signed with Mississippi State. For one reason or another, it just didn't come together. And when you begin to think about, okay, and we mentioned like Lofton not pitching this year, you know, we talk about what we're returning and all that kind of stuff, and we'll talk a little bit about that too. Because we've had some players that have come out, obviously, and announced that they're going to be with us another season. There's a few other guys out there that we're kind of holding out on decisions. Some will wait for the draft. Some will wait until they're drafted before they make their decision. If you put it out there that you're coming back, you know, you're pretty much saying, I'm foregoing the draft. Now, that's not to say you won't get a call, but those area scouts see that and they think, well, okay, I'll just kind of move along here. So it's a risk. I mean, it is. And I say that just because of the fact that I'm talking to some of these people, that's what they say. But, you know, again, kind of looking at kind of what you're losing in the portal. We mentioned, you know, Ross Highfield, one of the more accomplished guys on the hitting side entering the portal for State, and he hit .218. Three tanks, 20 ribbies. And, of course, that home run against Alabama was pretty special. That was a great day. Pinch hit, brought in Ross, and what do you know? He hits one off the scoreboard and left. It proved to be the difference in that ballgame. That was a lot of fun. It really was. Steven Spoletta, guys, he had 15 at-bats. He had that one big tank, had six RBI. You know, he's a guy that probably should have had more opportunities to swing, but, you know, what do you do? I mean, you don't put him in as a DH. You can pull Noah Sullivan out of there. And Spoletta was a guy at times defensively, was just a little bit up and down as a catcher. You're not going to put him at third in place of Ace Reese. Not going to take him out of there. Nolan Stevens, a guy, I wonder, maybe, I don't want to put all this burden on Nolan's shoulders, but like after the injury to him, sometimes it was a bit of an adventure in the outfield. I mean, Nolan had fashioned himself into a good right fielder. He had .320 this year, four tanks, 21 ribbies. So him and Ross obviously did the most. Ross ended up with 124 at-bats. Nolan with just 100. But Nolan Stevens, a great athlete. We, again, wish him the best at Oklahoma. We'll see him next year if the schedule rotation goes the way I expect it to, as Oklahoma will come here and we'll go to Texas. Lucas Buckner hit .289. And you remember the game against Southern Miss, he was kind of the only offense we had there. But 22 appearances and six starts. Most of those starts came down the stretch. You know, he started some games in a regional for us. Didn't do much offensively, but there was no drop-off defensively with Lucas in there. But he, again, hit 289 this year. Had a couple RBIs, too. No tanks, and you don't expect that. But a little bit of Punch and Judy guy, but, again, very much a dirtbag. Dylan Cupp. Dylan's situation is so wild because he was having the best offensive year of his career. Hitting 282, and the on-base percentage was ridiculous. I mean, you know, it just seemed like he could always work a walk. I mean, guys, he played in 33 games. He had 36 walks. Is that right? Am I looking at the numbers wrong? Is that right? Let me double check that. 21 walks, yeah. That was, it's kind of a ridiculous number. But, yeah, 21 walks and only 22 strikeouts. You know, that was kind of the rub on him, right, last year. So you could see Dylan was kind of coming into his own, but it's like he got the yips defensively. And love Dylan Cupp, man. He's a great kid. Comes from a great family. Our thoughts and prayers are with Wayne Cupp, Dylan's dad, as he recovers from this terrible accident that happened to him, really. But yeah, when Sawyer got in there, it kind of solidified some things. It's still so interesting to think Sawyer Reeves loses the job at second, which allows Gatlin Sanders to enter the everyday lineup, and then Sawyer takes over at short. So it's like Sawyer loses the job at second, and then the middle infield kind of is shorn up. It's just, you know, it's interesting how life works. Let's see here. Let's see. Michael O'Brien hit a buck 90 this year. 37 appearances, 4 starts. Landis Davila, just 1 hit and 6 at-bats. Jackson Owen, of course, had the medical issue, played sparingly early on, 6 appearances to 1 start. But you're not losing a ton. You know, I think Nolan Stevens is a guy that could be a future pro. You know, I don't know if he makes the show or not. Got to learn to handle that breaking ball in the hands. But from a physical skill standpoint, I think Nolan Stevens is probably the guy that I would say is the biggest loss on the hitting side right now. But again, you played a lot of games without him due to that injury. And you remember, it was all out effort. He runs into that wall out there and was just never really the same, you know. And tried to get out there and give it a go a couple times because he loved his teammates. But looking on the pitching side, you know, Gavin Black has had the 1 appearance this year. And they kind of kept it quiet. You know, that's kind of a trademark of the Lamonas administration. You know, they just didn't talk about injuries. But, yeah, Black had an injury, and then he was like, well, it'll be a couple weeks, it'll be a month, and then he never came back. And so you lose the potential, but you don't lose the production. People forget, we kind of picked Gavin Black up late after Parker saw him at a JUCO showcase. Working down a little bit more as far as his portal goes, Luke Dotson, obviously, I believe, probably the most effective and accomplished of the guys that we lost in the portal. There's still a chance you may get him back. No guarantees, though. But he had 18 appearances this year, goes 1-2 on the year with an ERA of 3.09, a couple of saves, well less than a hit per. 23 and a third innings pitch, allowed 18 hits and just 8 runs, 34 punch-outs against 12 walks. A 3-1 ratio. An opponent's hitting just .214 against him. You know, he had a couple of outings that were clunkers, but he was a guy. And maybe you just look back in hindsight and say, maybe, you know, once Hungate went down, we should have went full-time with Dotson as the closer. You know, hindsight's always 20-20. And, of course, Kevin Minnell, 11 appearances and 2-0 record, 4.3 ERA, just 14 innings pitch, allowed right at a hit per, allowed 7 runs on those 14 hits. 19 strikeouts against 5 walks. So, you're pretty good number there. The issue with Minnell was he just really struggled to get left-handers out. Really, really struggled to get left-handers out. Robert Fortenberry, 6 appearances, was better down the stretch. Had a couple of good outings of, I guess, Auburn and I can't remember the other one. But no record, 11.12 ERA, went just 5 2/3 of an inning on the year. And again, this is a guy we expected to be kind of a first guy out of the bullpen type, you know, because of the fact that he do a couple different variations of the change. Just weren't able to get it done. But, seven earned runs on seven hits, five strikeouts, one walk, and batting average against a 304. It just did not – the stuff just didn't translate to the SEC. It just didn't. That's just kind of how life works. And so, again, when you look at this, I know the number of names can be kind of unsettling if you're a Bulldog. And one of the things that I want to remind you guys too, and I'm going to be as kind and nice as I can be when I say this. Just because you know a player's name doesn't mean that he's really good. Okay? Because here's what's changed. Used to, we talked about players being household names. Well, because of so much instant media, right? Because like the job we do and some of our competitors and things like that, you're getting more stories. You're getting more insight into a program than you've ever had before. So as a result, you know a lot more about these players, which is a good thing. The fact that every game is now televised gives you an opportunity. Used to years ago, we listened to the game on the radio and listen to Jim Ellis call a game, or we'd read the box score in the paper and maybe a 300-word recap. And so you were kind of limited when it came to the access of the players. And so I think there is maybe a maturing of the mind within the fan base, especially for those of us that have been around for a long time, is that we didn't grow up with all of this information in our face. The internet's, 30 years old? Something like that? And so we didn't always have instant access to information about our teams and our players. And so we've become more familiar than ever before. And I think that's where the younger generation kind of handles it a little bit better. They don't get so incredibly emotionally attached to these guys because they're used to it. But I see in the Facebook groups especially, we'll have a player go in the portal from, it doesn't matter what sport it is, that didn't have a lot of production. And then I see people, oh my gosh, I hate this. You didn't even know who he was, right? And I don't want to assign motive there, but I think some people just have all this portal angst. And it's like, oh, I just hate the portal. Well, I hate it too, but I love it when we get players out of it. And sometimes, especially in cases like this, Brian O'Connor is a brand new coach. And Brian O'Connor wants to win big next year. Brian O'Connor didn't get here and say, well, give me a year to get my guys in. He's like, no, give me a month. Give me the summer. Give me this portal cycle with what we have coming back. And then I'll build around that with some players that I have connections with, and we'll work the portal and see if we can't find some other guys. So we're looking to win big next year. We're not looking to just, okay, we'll take a year and kind of get our feet under us and figure it out. And so in order for that to happen, we have to use the portal both ways. You have to have some outgoing traffic. And listen, we just ran through some numbers here, okay? Now, some of those guys maybe didn't get enough of an opportunity to show what they can do in games. They have plenty of time in practice to try to earn some playing time. But, guys, I'm not going to be disrespectful to anybody that's ever worn a uniform, but there have been some guys, not just in recent years, but over the years, that are really not good enough to play at Mississippi State, but they play at Mississippi State. Now, what I mean by that is, I'll give you a good example. For those of you that were around, in 89, and I think most people that were around then and before, people who lived through the 89 team, and that was 10 years before we went to the super regional format. If there had been a number one seed in the NCAA tournament in 89, it would have been Mississippi State. We were the best team in the country. We had spent several weeks at number one, and rightfully so. And you go back and you think about this. We talk about familiarity with the roster, right? So Barry Winford was our catcher. Pete Young was our third baseman. Brad Hildreth was our shortstop. Of course, Berg Masters at second. Tommy Raffo at first. And then John Cohen, a guy you're familiar with. Tracy Eccles played some in right for us. And then, of course, Jody Hurst. And then Richie Graham was your DH. And so we remember that because that team was so special, right? But how many of those reserves do you know? Like, if you weren't in school at the time, well, you know John Shea was on the team, right? You know the Mitchell brothers, they were part of that too. You know, Ron Winford was on the team. You know, of course, you had Tracy Jobes and, you know, Bobby Reed and Chris George. And, you know, there were a lot of other guys. Of course, Pete was a closer. John Harden was on that team. You know, you can run through a lot of names. But the reason that we remember those names so distinctly is because they were the main players. You know, nowadays, the game has changed a lot. You mix and match a lot more. And maybe we do it too much, to be quite honest with you. It's like I think about this Luke Dodson thing. Well, you know, we want to go righty-lefty. I understand that. But sometimes you just got to go with a guy that can go out there and throw gas and get you out of an inning. But I share that with you because it's important to understand some guys need to leave for the betterment of the team and for themselves. And it seems like we have this conversation multiple times a year. And it always bears repeating, though. I don't want any young man to come here and waste his career. And he said, but Steve, that sounds so terrible. Why would you feel like you wasted your career at Mississippi State? Well, if you have the opportunity to play somewhere else and get on the field and make some memories and maybe catch the eye of an area scout, you probably should do that. Yeah, we wouldn't want to deny somebody that opportunity. We want depth, right? But we talk about it all the time. You only get a short time in life to play ball. Yeah, I want a stacked roster too, but I don't want anybody to ever be resentful that they came here and maybe didn't get what they wanted out of it. And some of that happens. Some guys get here and just figure out, you know what, I'm not going to play as much here as I want to. I need to go, right? You know, you're not going to have a lot of Nate Chesters. Yeah, Nate Chester, they were having the exit interview with him last year, and he's like, hey, I just want to come back. I don't care if I play an inning. I just want to come back and be around the guys. And you know what? We talk about being an 80-grade teammate. He may have been the locker room, clubhouse, dugout guy. That guy loved Mississippi State, loved Mississippi State baseball. Only got a handful of bats, got the hit against Missouri, and they plunked him, if memory serves me correct. His old team. And so I share that with you because it's important to understand, not to just look at this from a selfish point of view, right? Simple as that. We have to think about what's best for everybody. Now, of course, our allegiance is to Mississippi State, to the M over S. You know, if you come in here and it doesn't work out, hey, best of luck. Thanks for giving your best, right? Thanks for giving your best. Good luck somewhere else. It just didn't work out here. Yeah, but I see some of these things on social media, and they're like, oh, we never should have signed him, blah, 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 blah. Well, kids don't sign themselves, and we don't get a voice in that either. We're not going to conduct a Twitter poll about who we should sign. This kid wants to commit. Should we take him? We're not going to operate that way. But when guys come in here and go through the workouts and they choose us, we chose them, they chose us. And then they work through this process and find out that, hey, maybe I'm behind somebody here. You know, maybe I'm behind Ace Reese. And we'll talk about him a little bit more after our top 10 list. You know, if you're a third baseman, you're expecting to play next year with Ace Reese back, you're not going to play. You may play late in the ballgame as a defensive replacement. You may have a chance to play midweek, whatever. But you're not going to play. And so you have to consider that aspect of it too. How much of my eligibility am I willing to donate to Mississippi State in hopes of playing someday? You know, the days of the old DJ Shockley, Georgia quarterback thing, those days are over. And many of you are too young to understand the reference. Let me just encourage you to Google DJ Shockley. This is a guy that sat for 4 years and got his opportunity and was absolutely an absolute baller at Georgia at quarterback and ended up going to the National Football League. And the reason we remember that is because it was such a rarity that a guy would be that patient and spend all that time getting better, working, plotting, scheming for one season. And he made the most of it. It's a great story. Truly is. But with the portal and with the NIL compensation these days, guys are just not going to be willing to do that in any sport. I'm not going to sit here and just be behind somebody else and then give myself one chance at this. It's not going to work that way. You know, and so we have to kind of change our mindset in that respect, too. I think that's important for everybody. As the game evolves as the players evolve, the coaches evolve, as a fan base, we have to as well. The days of, you know, the four-year senior, somebody staying here the full time, those days are pretty much over. You know, Hunter Hines may be the last guy to come in here and spend all 4 years. Honest to goodness. We talk about the home run record. It may stand forever because in the portal era, guys are just not going to do it. You know, if I'm not a regular starter, I'm just going to go. And how many regular starters are you going to have as freshmen when you've gotten so portal heavy these days? That's important to think about. You know, if you think about Hunter Hines coming back, and that, you know, we may be talking about Hunter Hines 25 years from now. I may not be. Somebody else may be. It's the home run king of Mississippi State, and not to mention the fact that he hit more than everybody, but he may just be the last guy to be able to spend four straight years at Mississippi State. Something to consider. Our Closewood Blair player of the day, and we'll talk more about this later, of course, is Ace Reese. Let's kind of get you up to speed on closewithblair.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. 24 years of experience. Get his know-how and expertise working for you. You can make the wrong decision with all this. You can. So don't overthink it. Stick with a winner like Blair Chandler. 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Blair has been my friend a long time. I don't do business with people that I don't trust. I trust Blair. You can too. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair. I get a text probably, you know, once a month, once every other month, that they're closing a loan with Blair and getting rave reviews. So get that pre-qualification letter. That's a life hack they don't tell you about. Because of the fact you'll get your real estate agent really hopping, because they'll know that you've got your financing approved and they'll get you in a home that is within your means. It's very important. Very, very important. So whether you're looking for your next home, your first home, your retirement home, let Blair Chandler get you in there. Let him get the keys for you. Let him get you to the closing table. That's the name, closewithblair.com. A real winner, Blair Chandler. All right, many of you know, you look at me and you think, well, you know, Steve's just a rocker at heart. If you listen to the show, you know that's not necessarily true. We almost did a country thing today. I got to do some more listening. I had a friend that kind of turned me on to an artist that I was unfamiliar with, and I do like some of the stuff. It is a little bit unrefined, but I think lyrically it's pretty good. But maybe we'll do that on Wednesday show. But, you know, I'm a rocker at heart, but, you know, back in the college days, the girls that I wanted to date, we use Dr. Evil quotes there, date, were all into dance music. And as a result, I adapted, got into that too, and learned a lot about the industry, of course. You know, we spent a little time with the outfit out of Baton Rouge called Cervello as a stage performer, put my own band together, things are going great. Ended up getting arrested and going to drug rehab, weighing 6'2", 146 pounds. You see me these days, I'm about 6'2", 210, 215, depends on what day it is. I was 146 pounds. Your good friend and host is in bad shape. It's true. Spent 3 days on IV drip. Thought they were going to put me in ICU. But here we are. It's a testament that people can and do recover. I have not, to this date, have not had a relapse. That's a part of the journey for some people, but for me, I learned my lesson early, and I'm very fortunate in that respect. But, yeah, no drugs or alcohol since December 10th, 1991. Anything that I'm involved in, I kind of overdo it. I'm that kind of person. Like, I'm either all in or all out. And so when I got into dance music and all that good stuff, of course, my buddy Benny Bruce that I had talked to for years – eventually, they were an opening band for us. They eventually became the Molly Ringwalds. And so you may know them more than you know us. But nevertheless, Benny was one of, if not the most talented musician that I have ever known as a friend. Now, I know a lot of guys that I call them friends, but they're really more acquaintances. But like, I've never like been to their house or that kind of stuff. I've hung out with them at shows and maybe gone to dinner and things like that. But Benny's a guy, I went by his house. You know, we'd sit around listening to music. We'd talk about things. We'd hang out. And incredible performer. And he spent some time as the keyboard player with Tuff. You may remember Tuff. And Stevie Rochelle from Tough and I traded some messages a while back because Benny's had some health issues, and I reached out to Stevie Rochelle to make sure that he knew. And still remembers my buddy Benny fondly. But Benny was obsessed with a synclavier. Now, if you don't know what that is, it started in the 70s, and eventually it evolved into basically a computer/keyboard instrumentation that changed music forever. So, you know, we had keyboards, but all of a sudden, when you had the synclavier, the whole outfit together, you could do a few things. Number one, you could alter the pitch of the keys. It wasn't just like picking a voice. You could kind of customize things. And then when they added the 16-bit sampler where you could sample things and then turn them into voices, it really changed things. I remember it wasn't Benny. I think it was David. It's a guy that played for me named David. And he was a bit of a savant on a keyboard too. He took a drill one day, and he turned the drill on inside an aluminum trash can, and he sampled it. And then he turned that into a voice for his keyboard. Like, that's the sample, is the drill going off. And you can, it's just weird stuff we did. We were kind of on the cutting edge of industrial type music. We were kind of in a Nine Inch Nails back then. But my point being is that the synclavier is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because of its contributions to music. And so I thought, hey, let's put a top 10 list together of some songs that you may know that involve the synclavier. Huge, huge. Very expensive. There was a time, I think Benny said, there was only like 12 or 13 in the world at one time. And then it got to be a little more affordable. When Depeche Mode recorded, I think it was Time for Reconstruction, and then Some Great Reward, and Black Celebration, that they didn't have a synclavier, but they had access to it either through a fellow musician or through the studio or producer. And so Depeche Mode, Duran Duran, bands like that were very, very on the cutting edge. I know that Nick Rhodes of Duran Duran was one of the first major professional performers to have a synclavier of his very own. So today is our tribute to the synclavier. All right, number 10. It's a pop song, and I can't really pick it out, but according to the notes, the Mr. song Broken Wings, and they had the hit Kyrie too, but Broken Wings, the song you probably know the best from them, was recorded with a synclavier. Number 9, a band from West Germany back before, when that was a thing, you know, before the Berlin Wall came down, there was West and East Germany. These guys are from the West. It's a band called Kraftwerk. Now, they were so enamored with the synclavier when they got access to one, they went back and re-recorded some of their earlier hits and re-released them. One of those is a song called Technopop. And when you hear it, you kind of get a sense of what's happening with the synclavier, which is one of the reasons I wanted to include this on the list. Because you could change voices almost instantaneously. And you can kind of manipulate sound that you couldn't do previously. And these guys, again, West German, they were totally obsessed with it. And so if you get into their catalog at all, you'll kind of get a sense they were really on the cutting edge of all of that stuff. Number 8, another top 40 song. And I still listen to this every once in a while. Love it, man. I do. It's Level 42's Something About You. Every album that they recorded had use of a synclavier. Now, this is a song that I don't know that this generation has truly embraced. When I was in middle school, this song came out, and it was revolutionary because Paul Hardcastle was able to, like, sample news voices. He was able to go record those things and add those on his own without having to use, you know, tape and things like that. He basically sampled voices from the news to talk about how the average age of casualties during the Vietnam War was 19. And so we're going with the song 19 from Paul Hardcastle. If you don't know that one, you should check it out. Again, it was very, very cutting edge. Number 6, one of the great rap albums of my lifetime was largely recorded with the synclavier. And it's Houdini's Escape album. And that's the one that many of you know. Right? Everybody knows Friends. How many of us have them? Let's Be Friends, before we go any further. But the big hit off that album was Freaks Come Out at Night. And again, you can kind of hear the synclavier and its majestic glory on that, because you know, they had the vocoder, and that was already a thing, right? And so they basically took a lot of the cutting-edge technology, and they put this thing together. And one of the reasons it made that album so memorable is we had really never heard anything like that. Number five, a song that you guys know well. It was covered by 6 a.m. a few years ago. We've had that song on the show. It's a song called Drive. And again, the synclavier, a huge part of this thing. I think you'll deal with that one. And we talked about Nick Rhodes earlier. The first recorded top single from Duran Duran with a synclavier, it's a song you all know. And maybe you didn't understand back then, because in the 80s, we just didn't quite, things were happening so quickly, we didn't quite realize, like, how are they doing that? How are they doing that? And so when the number one hit, The Reflex, came out, there was so much going on in the background of that song. The production value was just elite. And then, of course, in the chorus, you know, the repeating the reflex, flex, 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 that's a key. That's not Simon singing it over and over again. They sampled him singing The Reflex and then used that as a voice on the keyboard, if that makes sense to you. It does. So The Reflex, your number four track. Number three, it makes a lot of sense in hindsight, because, again, when this song hit the radio, we weren't quite sure where all this was coming from, because there was a lot of non-traditional voices used on the keys on this song. And this goes back to the very, very early 80s. And it's Soft Cell's Tainted Love. And everybody knows it. But when you go and listen to that drum beat and you listen to all the stuff in the background, that stuff was revolutionary at the time. Nowadays, you can just sample anything. You can go download Pro Tools to your home computer, plug in a keyboard, and you can kind of recreate a lot of this stuff if you've got a little bit of know-how. But back in those days, it was just so incredibly crazy. I'm so glad that I grew up in that time to see the evolution of music. It's gotten so watered down these days. Not a lot of new stuff. Yeah, the new wave of music is going to be AI. And you already see the apps you can download that'll alter your voice. And you can sing like, you know, Layne Staley from Alice in Chains. I see it all the time. That's the new wave. It's going to be untalented singers singing through computers and then putting lyrics in and letting AI do it. I mean, it's the wave of the future. You might as well get ready. I just don't know if they're going to have the authenticity or the grit in their voice to kind of make it work. But that's the wave of the future. We spoke about Depeche Mode earlier, and Some Great Reward is actually my favorite early album from Depeche Mode. I'm a huge Depeche Mode fan. Love them. Absolutely love Depeche Mode. Love Dave Gahan. Maybe because it's one of the only karaoke songs I can still pull off these days. But I'm going to go with a song that is. It was recorded years ago, but it still stands true today, especially with what's happening in the country right now with these riots out in L.A., and all of that is so unfortunate. And there's a lot of things that I could say about it, but I don't want to get political about it. But I think Dave and the guys, Martin Gore and those guys, said it best, you know, people are people. I'm a firm believer in that, but I'm also a firm believer in the law. And so I consider myself really more of a moderate than anything else. I guess most people do. But the reality of it is this, is all human life is precious. But those human lives need to abide by the rules, right? When you put yourself in harm's way, you know, when you try to cut corners, you put yourself in danger. And then all of a sudden people want to hold you accountable for that. And for you cutting corners, you don't get to have a revolution. That's just not how it works. You know, and then ultimately you'll be carted off to jail and zip ties, and you'll blame the man, but the man you should blame is yourself. Is yourself. You put yourself in a situation, you chose to do things the wrong way. When I was arrested, I was guilty of a lot of things they charged me with. There were some other things that I wasn't guilty of. There were some other things I was guilty of they didn't know about. And so I just took my lick, right? And then I decided to fly straight afterwards. And that's what I would encourage other people to do. And trust me, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they're betting on the good version of Steve to show up every day. And so in one day it may not. One day, you may just catch me on the wrong day. We get our name in the paper for the wrong reasons. But number one, probably the biggest hit, at least of the 80s, to feature the synclavier. And again, we talk about manipulating sound. When you hear that gong at the beginning of Beat It with Michael Jackson, that's a product of the synclavier. Very, very interesting, right? One of the most recognizable songs of all time. And Michael Jackson used the synclavier extensively on the Bad album. There was a lot of that there. And you can go and kind of see the maturation. Of course, Michael Jackson and his record company and everybody behind him had all the money in the world. Quincy Jones, those people were always on the cutting edge of technology. And so Michael Jackson used it extensively during the height of his musical career. So there you go. And so again, you see this is an instrument that has been used across different genres. But again, wanted to kind of turn you on to that because of the fact it was a very revolutionary development in music. Like the fact that you and I could go sing a note and sample it. And you can still do it now, but it's a byproduct of the synclavier that was, you know, created back in the late 70s. And it's an American product. And so you could go sing a note and make that a sample and then use that as a voice on your keyboard. And then if you needed to sharpen the sound or mute the sound, you could do that too. You could do, you know, as part of you could use a sample and then use your effect to create an event. And I'm getting real technical here, but you could manipulate that. And that's one of the things that I think makes all that stuff so unique is it made it so much easier to do that. So instead of having to have a million takes of, I got to hit this triangle just right, or I got to break this bottle just right, you could break it once and then sample it and then manipulate it the way you want to. And again, that was the precursor for what we have today with Pro Tools and so many other things, is that you can use computers to manipulate sound to create better music. Incredible. And so you got a little bit of a history lesson there too. And I have a lot of people that say, Steve, you know a lot about music. I don't know as much as I want to, but it has been a passion in my life, and I enjoy celebrating that with you for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes a show. So there we go. But again, thoughts and prayers, and again, thoughts and prayers are often not enough for what's happening in our country out in Los Angeles, and hope for no loss of life, and hopefully they'll get this thing handled very, very quickly. Top 10 list brought to you by Kalido Guitars. That's Kalido Guitars. Visit KalidoGuitars.com today. Whether you're a player, you know a player, or you know somebody that wants to be a player, they play a lot at Kalido Guitars. Expertise, unsurpassed selection, quality of products and service, just exactly what you want. It's a Mississippi State-based, owned and operated company. Based out of Lake Jackson, Texas, they have family here in Starkville. I've broken bread with these folks just downtown. Yeah, incredible people. And again, Lake Jackson, Texas, just south of Houston down there. If you know the area, you know the quality of that community there in Lake Jackson, Texas. If you can't make it to their showroom, visit them at KalidoGuitars.com, or you can call in. And here's the cool thing about them. It's not just guitars. It's everything you need. Now, granted, you want a new axe, they can take care of you. Acoustic, classical, electric, beginner, mid-level, professional grade. You can find it all there. Guitar cases, gig bags, accessories, cables, anything you need, you can get from them. And you're going to get quality service before, during, and after the sale. I cannot recommend them highly enough. I got a guitar stand from them I'm awfully proud of. They're going to give you some incentive, too. By listening to our show, there's a promo code. You know it well. It's BSR. That stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you a 10% discount off your purchase, free shipping, and no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. In addition to that, they're going to make a 5% donation to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. Be sure and check them out today, KalidoGuitars.com, for all your guitar needs, and also helping out a Mississippi State-owned and operated company. Next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. Everything you need as far as Mississippi State merch can be found at Campus Bookmart. Whether it's apparel, gift ideas, diploma frames, anything you need to detail out your fan cave can be found there as well. We encourage you to go by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. If you can't make it to town, but you'd still like to support a Starkville business, we're all about that. Be sure and check them out at campusbookmart.net, and we'll give you, again, promo code BSR. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. I cannot say how I'm always so incredibly impressed with all the selection of merchandise there. I saw some people looking recently for some baseball jerseys. You can find them at Campus Bookmart. Don't overthink it, right? And as always, we encourage you to support those that support the Boneyard and, of course, Mississippi State. Campus Bookmart, a huge part of that. Just a stone's throw away from campus, butted up on the backside there, just not too far from Lee Hall. Yeah, Campus Bookmart. All right, let's talk a little bit about, who's coming back. And some of this is going to be draft specific. There are going to be some guys that kind of wait to make their decision, because we just kind of discussed this earlier. When you put it out that you're coming back, a lot of people take that very seriously, including people in pro baseball. And so I thought, let's just kind of run it down today. I wrote a piece. You can go read it if you're driving now and maybe you don't remember everything, or you got to take a call, whatever. But taking a Diamond Dog inventory, just want to kind of run down, some of the players that we know. Again, there are some players that are out of eligibility. Nate Chester, Aaron Downs, Hunter Hines, Chase Hungate, Carson Ligon, Joe Powell, Sawyer Reeves, Stone Simmons. I guess Stone could probably apply for a waiver, but, Stone's about to get married, and we think that's a great thing. And just ready to kind of get on with life. And we've already discussed who all is in the portal, but here are the players that have already announced their intentions to return for 2026. Pitcher Dane Burns, and listen, this guy has got some filthy stuff. And again, I don't know that you saw the full assortment of Dane Burns. Again, not too far removed from TJ, but I expect him to be a dude next year. Bryce Chance has now announced that he plans to return. That's big, not just because he's a fan favorite and he's a guy that grew up cheering for the Bulldogs. That's a good story in and of itself. But down the stretch, man, Bryce Chance, the clutch gene was there. When he first got into the lineup, it just always felt like if he came up with two men on and two outs or even a runner in scoring position, he'd find a way to put a ball in play. I think a lot of that is the approach of Bryce Chance. Not trying to do too much, right? Just do what the job requires. If there's less than two outs, we need a routine fly ball to left, he can get you that. But how many times has Bryce Chance come up in a big situation and just lined the ball back up the middle or lined it over to second baseman's head over and over and over again? There's a place for a guy like him. I think ideally you'd like to play him at left rather than center, even though he did a capable job there this year. But it's big. The news has been so well received, too, around our fan base. And it's like I like the way that we're kind of – working these out where there's something to kind of get excited about every day. But Bryce Chance, 332 this year, 14 doubles too. Four jacks, 43 ribbies. And I look at this, man, if we're getting 45 ribbies a season out of Bryce Chance, we ought to have a good team, right? And there were some times early in this season where we just couldn't get a run out of him. It just kind of worked out that way. But down the stretch, I don't know that anybody was better in the clutch than Bryce Chance. And, we talk about this 332 average. He's a career 312 guy. That first year back in 23, and he got hurt, and Dakota Jordan took over and left, and that was something we kind of had to contend with. Only played in 36 games, but he hit 330 that year and had a couple of jacks. Now, in 24, the average dipped a little bit, 286, but he hit six jacks, 36 RBI, and 217 at-bats. This year, nine less at-bats. Still played in 58 games. Started 56. But we sat him a little bit, but not a whole lot. But he scored 49 runs. That's a career high. He had 69 hits, a career high. 14 doubles, a career high. Tied a career high with one triple, right? And a career high in RBIs at 43. On base percentage of right at 400. And he's been a career 396 guy on base percentage. He also swiped 10 bags this year, also a career high. Four sacrifice hits, also a career high. So he had a career year. And there's some people that might want to take a swing at him late in the draft, but I'm told that Bryce is fully committed to coming back. And so that's a good piece to get back. Again, not just because of the fact that, hey, he's a kid from down the road in Madison and people have kind of grown up watching him develop, not because his family's all Mississippi State people, but because Bryce Chance deserves to be here, right? Simple as that. Yeah, we like him. We like his family. We like the fact that it's a great story about a young man growing up dreaming of playing at Dirty Noble Field and getting to do it. But guys, he's coming off a career year. If he's anywhere close to what he's been next year, what a great thing for Mississippi State. Absolutely outstanding to get Bryce back. Ben Davis has announced, and what's interesting about Ben too is Ben's getting some draft buzz. It'll be interesting to see how that's handled. You know, of course, Ben is a guy that, we kind of moved around a little bit, changed his role at times. I think he's very comfortable coming out of the pen, but he did a great job in the start against Northeastern in a game that we absolutely had to have. But looking at Ben's numbers, 4-2 this year, 3.77 ERA. He threw starter innings, 57 and a third this year, which was second on the team. Did you realize that? You know, the only guy that threw for more innings this year was Pico. Yeah, Ben Davis, 57. Less than a hit per at 52, allowed 24 earned runs on 52 hits. Had 61 punch outs against 24 walks. We had some walks early in the year, kind of melted there against Texas. Opponents hit 336, but a ton of ground outs from Ben. And again, it took a little while for him to kind of get going. And Ben's a guy, too, that is a guy that rebounds pretty quickly, so maybe you keep him in the bullpen. He's a big, burly guy. You know, he's only going to get bigger and stronger. But it's just interesting to kind of see how this has all kind of come to be. You know, he starts out middle reliever, and the next thing you know, we start him against Queens. He has a good start, and then this absolutely kind of melts against Texas. He walked four and gave up three runs in that inning, in that ball game. But you start thinking about that aspect of it. Four walks out of his 24 came in that one game, and then you look at, there's a stretch there where he didn't walk anybody. You know, we get into SEC play, and against Florida, kind of got knocked around a little bit, only walked one. He didn't walk. He pitched two games against Auburn, didn't walk anybody. And then two games against Kentucky, he walked one guy. You know, so down the stretch, Ben was outstanding, absolutely outstanding. Of course, the elongated outing against Northeastern proved to be a very good one. But that's a big piece to get back. But I as happy as I am about it, and I haven't talked to Ben, you know, I'm confident he is going to get some calls from some teams. I am absolutely confident of that. And, what's interesting, you know, you kind of work through, he's already played 2 years at Itawamba, you know, and, had the injury, you know, that kind of shut him down a little bit, but he is draft eligible. So I'm excited about the news, but I'm also know enough about this process to understand that Ben Davis is going to have an opportunity to get some money, and perhaps he's already gotten enough right now where he feels like, hey, you know what? I'm good for now. It's big. Charlie Foster, and there was some rattling around the last month of the season that Charlie may get approached by Georgia. Now, of course, Georgia was the team that he was committed to, and then some things changed with Georgia. I don't know if you recall this. Maybe you do. You know, of course, you know, Wes Johnson's a coach there, and listen, his agent kind of did their job and did what they could to kind of leverage the situation to kind of feather their own nest there. But it's just interesting as you work through. You know, all of this is so interesting to me. You know, maybe you see it differently, but you know, that one of the guys that was on that staff at Georgia left and went to LSU. And so the talk was, is like, hey, it was kind of his decision that we needed to focus more on the portal and the pitching side of things. So there was some chat that they were going to come back around to Charlie. And that's interesting. But Charlie elects to stay. Now, you guys got to see a little bit. You know, again, Foster, all fall and spring was legit. I mean, legit. And it wasn't just me saying this. I remember it goes to Aaron Fitt. I think it was Fitty that came. But we had some D1 baseball guys here, and they were like, hey, Charlie Foster could be a Sunday guy back half of the SEC season. That's kind of what we expected. He got a little bit banged up, and mentally he needed to mature a little bit. And Charlie has said, you know, Southern Miss kind of got to me a little bit, you know. And he's better for it today. So getting Charlie back, again, that's a whether it's out of the bullpen or whether that's a starting role for him, Charlie Foster is a guy with major league potential, and we need him in maroon and white. Ryan McPherson, I was told at Hoover, if Parker was retained in some capacity, it meant really good things for Ryan McPherson and Mississippi State. That McPherson would likely be back. And, of course, when I shared the story, when we broke the news of Justin Parker coming back, and we actually broke the news, it's not just something we say, it's something we do. Ryan McPherson was the first to retweet it. And, of course, the astute Mississippi State social media mavens out there, they picked up on it too. They're like, hey, Ryan McPherson's tweeting this thing out. That's got to mean good things. And it did. And so, again, you begin to think about that kind of coupled with Brian O'Connor's philosophy about we're going to build around the high school player. We're going to develop them and hopefully get them into pro baseball at some point. That's big. It's huge. Huge to have both of those guys back. And they can kind of mature and grow together. And, of course, big news, Ace Reese is back. And I've been on a couple radio shows, and we've shared this. I've always been on the optimistic side that things would work out because I just said, you know what, Ace Reese is going to be the face of our program. And let's just be honest about it. It'd be an embarrassment, right? You hire Brian O'Connor, and then the leading offensive player on your team leaves the program, right? We just simply could ill afford for that to happen. There was a lot of chatter, you know, some teams out there they were chasing Ace. And I go back to the fact that, number one, Ace is happy here. His family is happy with him here. His family has made some very good friends among the rest of the baseball parents, and they are, Aaron and Christina, great people. Great. These are the kind of people you'd want to go to dinner with, right? And Aaron's the kind of guy to want to pick up a check. I mean, they're just great people. And they belong here. They do. They fit in so well here. But I had a Major League Baseball scout tell me something. He says, you know, if I was advising Ace Reese, here's what I would tell him. It's like, hey, you came from Houston. You joined a Southeastern Conference, a much more difficult conference. You ended up being an All-American at Mississippi State. You led them in so many offensive categories. Why would we mess with that? Why would we mess with that? What, we're going to go somewhere else? Different hitting background, different hitting philosophy. You know, maybe that guy tinkers with your swing a little bit. You know, there's a lot of things that can change. You know, there's going to be a different lineup here, but it's going to be a different lineup there. But, you know, why make yourself more uncomfortable? What you're doing is working, so let's not change anything. And that makes perfect sense to me. And there's a lot of guys out there, too, that are kind of, you know, in pro baseball. Like, I really don't want the two-time transfer. You know, I don't want that guy. You know, there's some guys that are so talented that you have to take them. But that's a part of the thing, too. But, again, if you think about Ace Reese, what is your ultimate goal here? What's to play pro baseball, right? And along the way, I'd love to go to Omaha, right? But ultimately, I want to play pro baseball. Well, he's going to play pro baseball no matter where he goes. So now it's about playing for that contract. Ace Reese has first-round potential, and I think one of the biggest pieces for him is kind of defensive development, right? He wants to play third. He wants to be a corner infielder. And so I think that's the real challenge for him this fall. And he was good at third base, but you know, he is a really good athlete, and people kind of, again, lose sight of the fact that he played the last month with a bad foot, you know, so maybe that push towards the line wasn't always what maybe he would want it to be. But Ace is our dude. And he sent shockwaves throughout the fan base. And, again, I want to credit everybody involved for getting the deal done, right, on all sides. Ace, Aaron, Christina, everybody. Everybody involved with Mississippi State, Zach Selman, everybody. You had to get this deal done because it's just too important. It's just too important for us. And I think it's important for Ace, too. You know, Ace Reese, yeah, if he goes in the portal, he's probably the biggest name in the portal. right? But he may go somewhere else, and maybe the hitting philosophy and the culture and the background and everything up there maybe is just not the same. So I think it's a wise decision. Of course, obviously, selfishly, I wanted Ace to return. But I think when you begin to kind of work through all this, you begin to realize that this was probably the best situation for all involved. And again, back to one of my friends in pro baseball, he goes, you know, hey, if it boils down to this, he said, just think about this for a second. You know, let's just say the money is comparable and somebody else is willing to pay Ace Reese $50,000 more. Well, number one, Mississippi State should make up the difference. He said, but how much money could that potentially cost him in the long run? It's like if you go somewhere else and you don't replicate or get anywhere close to what you did here, it's going to cost you millions, not thousands, millions. And you have to kind of look at those things. And all these guys have advisors and agents these days, so that's an important thing to consider. And, of course, Reed Stallman also was announced, and he is one that I was a little bit interested to see how this would play out. You know, Reed Stallman is not a natural outfielder. He's a first baseman by trade. And we signed him thinking Hunter Hines was going to go sign in the draft. And then we got creative and found a way to get Reed out there. And listen, at times it was an adventure. But you look at the numbers that Reed put up this year, it's kind of ridiculous, to be honest with you. I mean we got to cut down on the strikeouts. But when you look at the good that he did at the plate, there was a time there where you couldn't throw to him. I mean, he absolutely just destroyed Missouri. But, I mean, you go back and think, Reed Stallman here – had 117 at-bats, hit 11 jacks, had 34 RBI. Think about that for a second. Double-digit jacks. You only had four guys do it, and he was one of them. And played in 44 games. The guys that finished ahead of him played in a dozen or more games than he did. Most of them around 15 games more. And so you begin to think about that. You look at the percentage of that, the percentage of at-bats. You know, there are some guys out there that had almost double the at-bats that Reed Stallman had. Again, Reed with 117. Guys, Ace had 227. You got multiple guys with over 200 at-bats. And so what could Reed Stallman do with another 50 or 60 at-bats? Well, if he's hitting home runs at that same frequency, he could be pushing 20. And so you got to find a home for him. And, again, maybe it's first base, and he hit 265. Well, I think, what, he hit 220 or something, right on 200 or something his final year. Before he transferred in from Campbell, and people were concerned about that. But I think Reed Stallman has kind of shown, hey, I have value here. And when he hits home runs, they are not wall scrapers, right? He hits the baseball with some authority. And you need some big left-handed power bats. You do. And you think about your roster composition. I don't know who all that O'Connor's going to bring in. But a lot of right-handed power out there in that portal. And so, again, you kind of put this thing together. We'll kind of see how things go. Now, the guys that have not announced a decision yet, and again, there's no requirement for that. They don't have to make a declaration. You know, Braden Booth is one of them. He did post a picture ensemble on Instagram today of him wearing maroon and white. Haven't seen anything. Garrick Fry hasn't made an announcement. There is some draft buzz about Garrick Fry. Low strikeout rate, a guy with power from both sides of the field, both sides of the plate. Can play multiple positions, a third baseman by trade, but it's proven to be a very capable left fielder. Pitcher Jack Gleason hasn't said anything, but we feel pretty confident there. And, of course, Pico is going to be drafted. It kind of goes without saying. Cato Leary, Jacob Pruitt, Gatlin Sanders, I'm not worried about those guys. JT Schnuer, Evan Sieri, another guy with some draft buzz, Duke Stone, guy with some eligibility. And so I haven't seen public declarations from any of those guys. I went and double-checked today before we did the show. Something may have come out this afternoon. But, I think most of those guys you can expect to be back. But I'm just kind of curious to see kind of what happens, like, with Jacob Pruitt. You know, what does Jacob Pruitt look like next year? Is he still in maroon and white? Yeah, I don't know. We brought him in hoping he would be a weekend starter, and then we were thinking, well, maybe he'll be our midweek guy, and it never really came together. And some of that, you know, he was a little bit banged up earlier in the year. And Evan Sieri, of course, best baseball of his college career was when he entered the rotation. And when we moved him in there, everybody was skeptical, but give Justin Parker and Evan Sieri both a lot of credit. And, of course, Duke Stone's a guy that we think a lot of, too, a lot of potential. And he's just a year removed from TJ as well. So we expect him to make a big jump next year. And then there's, of course, Noah Sullivan. I think Noah's a guy that will wait out the draft. If I had to say it today, and Noah Sullivan's either going to be playing pro baseball or playing at Mississippi State next year. I think it could be a situation like Dave Mershon, right, where he gets drafted late. We have to kind of sweat this thing out. I think ideally Noah would probably like to sign. And that's not me. That's my opinion. Okay, that's not inside information, just my opinion. I think because of his age, he probably would like to sign. The issue with Noah, I think, is he doesn't have a natural position. You know, I think he can play some first base for you. DHs typically don't get drafted high, right? There's not a lot of Edgar Martinez types out there. You got to have a place to play him. I think that's one of the things that will cause him to kind of slip in the back, you know, a few rounds of the draft. But he may have a decision to make. Nate Williams, another guy, too, that's draft eligible. But, and again, kind of 2 years removed from TJ. Took him a long recovery process. So we'll see how things go with him. So, again, no declaration yet. We do expect most of those guys to be back, if not all of them, with the exception of Pico. And again, the Garrett Fry thing is interesting to me. You know, again, it took us so long to kind of find a home for him. We played him at second, played him at first, and all those with varying levels of success. We finally found a home for him. But he is a guy that I think is very intriguing. So we'll watch him because he does have another year of eligibility left, and he could be one of those guys too. It's a two-day draft this year, but he could be a guy that, you know, gets some late buzz in that respect. So that's kind of where we are right now. The next segment of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about who's coming in and kind of what they've done. And, of course, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle without any question. If you're bringing a large group to town, and you certainly should, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse needs to be your destination. Six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three baths, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, it's all so great. We've stayed there. I'm not just whistling Dixie. We stayed there for New Year's, had a great time. It was so nice to have everybody under one roof instead of everybody scattered all over the Golden Triangle, and you got to try to coordinate dinner and things like that. Just make life easier for yourself and all your guests. Just stay together at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And it doesn't have to be a ballgame weekend. It's open 365 days a year. You just got to plan ahead, right? And so maybe you got some vacation time. You're thinking, you know what, hey, maybe we're not going to take the big trip this year. Maybe mom's expecting. Maybe we're just trying to be smart this year. And, you know, quite simply, maybe you're just thinking, you know what, I want to go to Starkville and enjoy some of my favorite places. We have friends up here. We have family there. Or maybe you're just thinking, you know what, let's get all the cousins together. Let's get mom, dad, sister, uncle, everybody together and just have a great time. Make some memories together. You're running out of opportunities to do that. And maybe your friends won't tell you that, but I'm telling you that because I love you, and I don't want you to regret one day and say, I wish mom or dad were here to see this when you could make those plans today. I don't want to sound morbid in that respect, but let's just be honest. Life is leaving all of us. You know, many of us have more life behind us than we have ahead of us. So we have to make opportunities like this so we can take pictures with all of you so you'll have them to refer to one day, right? Stark Vegas Clubhouse, without a doubt, best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page auto-populates. You can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. Again, it's 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating there if you're staying a ballgame weekend. But more importantly, the booking options are going to pop up. You can go to Airbnb, VRBO, completely up to you. Maybe you've got a credit. Maybe you just like to use them. That's cool with me. But if you want to save a few bucks, I can help you. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay. That's BSR, the number 1010. 10% off your stay. The premier place to stay in the Golden Triangle. And again, you owe it to yourself. You owe it to your family to kind of be the linchpin to go ahead and make those plans. You just check availability and call everybody and say, hey, we are doing this, and you're invited. We need you to help out with this. It's going to be a great time for mom and dad. It's going to be a great time for the friends, whoever. No matter what group you're putting together, it's a great way to go spend time together at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, we touched on this a little bit, and I had some people that said, Steve, you talk about some of these guys, but I don't really understand. All right, so Aiden Teal one of the latest guys to join the Mississippi State portal class. He had 317 last year. Guys, 20 doubles, right? 20 doubles, 7 jacks, 40 ribby. Those are among the team leaders. But I'm told that he's a guy that can play multiple outfield spots, could be your center field guy, could be your left guy, just kind of depending on how things shake out. But he is a guy that will be in your lineup every day. James Nonnally is a guy that can kind of play all over, another guy you're expecting to play some in the outfield. Again, a freshman, young guy, but he played 48 games this year. Had the one jack but 26 ribbies, but this is a guy that's only going to get bigger and stronger. But, hitting about 300, he also runs the bases pretty well, too. Both of those guys with 9 swipes. Teal, 9 for 9. Nonnally, 9 for 12. So, good additions there. And then, what about Sean James? Where does he fit in? He's a utility guy that can play multiple spots, as we discussed. He DH'd 11 games, played in left a couple, played second base a couple, and you start thinking about that aspect of it, kind of putting this thing together next year with a middle infield. Gatlin Sanders obviously is going to have something to say about who plays second too. But when you got a guy like James, again, a younger guy that could be kind of a plug-and-play guy whenever you have a need somewhere, that's big, and he hit 373. Now, granted, he only played 26 games, started 15. But 373 points out of 1,000 in a game of failure, hitting the baseball is the most difficult thing to do in sports. And people that tell you otherwise just don't know sports. I mean, you get different velos, different ball conditions, different weather conditions. You're hitting a round ball with a round bat, and it's tough. But this is a guy that's done some good things for them, obviously. And 9 walks on the year, 16 Ks, 404 in stolen bases. But again, another young guy. Again, you're building. And so that's one of the things that Brian O'Connor talked about. We're building. And again, we'll speak directly and figure these things out. But like Tomas Valencias, that guy's a real dude. And I have talked to some people in college baseball that say this guy is a potential Friday night starter, depending on how the portal goes, right? Because you may find somebody equally or even more talented that could go Friday. You put him on Saturday, but he's a real dude. 6-1 record, 4.59 ERA, and you say, well, Steve, that's a little bit high. Well, he's a freshman throwing in the second-best conference in America, made a dozen starts and 13 appearances, and had a staff high of 64 and two-thirds of an inning. Yeah, that'll work. 70 punch-outs to 17 walks. That's right there at 6-1. That's pretty incredible. 256 batting average against. That'll only get better as he gets bigger, stronger, and a little bit stronger and kind of a little crisper, with the analytics there. So you've already got a weekend guy and you've got a couple position pieces all from Virginia. And then you look at, Viet Valencias too, a guy that was primarily recruited as a first baseman, but could probably still do it, but played a lot of left. And I think some of that's just a byproduct of kind of getting him in the order. But, all Big Ten, second team selection. But he is another guy that kind of gives you some versatility. And also, a big, burly right-hander that can turn a baseball around. You got to dig that. And you got to think, too, again, we kind of discussed this before. Illinois didn't have anything around him. And so when you think about him coming in here and hitting the lineup, it's got Ace Reese, potentially Noah Sullivan, Garrick Frey, and then all these other players we're hoping to take, that's only going to make it better. He's going to even get more opportunities to be productive. But, he led them with a .348 batting average last year. 7 tanks, 58 RBI. So a guy that's driving in some runs and also stealing the bases a little bit too. You don't think guys that big would run. But, guys, Illinois finished 6 games over .500. So not great. A lot of people are wondering, okay, well, Steve, what else is left at Virginia? And we need a shortstop, right? We need a catcher. And we're not just going to take everybody from Virginia. But, Eric Becker is a stud. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. He is an absolute stud. Hits .368, plays short. Second on the Virginia team with hits with 74, hit 9 tanks, 52 RBI. Yeah, if you can get him, you absolutely have to get him. We're competing some big-time programs, including Texas, where he recently visited. And so that's something to kind of consider. Henry Ford, and my friends in pro baseball say he is going to be drafted. It's just going to be a matter of what is his number and who's willing to meet it. But he is going to be drafted. He is a guy that is a real dude. You know, he had 362, led them with 75 hits, had 11 tanks, which also led the team, and a 46 RBI. But, yeah, so even if he commits to Mississippi State, we're going to have to wait out the draft there. But, again, nothing imminent that we're aware of. But a lot of people have had a lot of questions about him specifically. But, again, even if he commits and signs a financial aid agreement with Mississippi State, it still may be a scenario where you're having to continue to look at the portal players. And it's interesting, too, you look at this Virginia team, like, kind of, you know, again, they finished 32-18 overall and really good at home and finished 16-11 in the ACC. But you look at some of these numbers, you can tell there were a couple things missing. Well, number one, the fact that Tomas Valencias had to pitch on the weekends as a freshman says a little bit. But they only hit 69 jacks last year. You know, 69 jacks. And I don't know that ballpark is especially offensive, especially early in the year. But some of this, too, I think is part of the hitting philosophy. You know, I think a lot of this is, hey, you want to hit line drives, you want to hit doubles, and they turn into home runs. And that may be a bit of a change for us. You know, when you got a guy like Ace Reese, you don't want to mess with what he's doing, but you could probably refine a few things. But they only gave up 39 home runs. And, you know, that's the thing that I think about. You know, people were, you know, ready to run the pitching coach off. But, you know, you look at what, obviously, what Brian O'Connor has recruited and developed there. I mean, Jay Volfick is a guy that shoved against us. Best game of his career. He was just 4-3 this year. And numbers pretty comparable to Valencias, but he had a worse record. You know, Valencias goes 6-1. He goes 4-3. But everything else is pretty much the same until you get to walks, and Wolfolk walked more guys. But numbers very, very comparable in that respect. But there wasn't the third starter, you know. And we talk about this all the time. The teams that play into June are teams that can find production from the bottom third of the order and find a bona fide third starter. Virginia wasn't able to do that. And again, I go back to some of the discussions that we had. I mean, it's like you finish five games above 500 in the ACC and three of your games are canceled due to a tragedy at Florida State and you don't make the tournament. You know, some of the, of course, is because of non-conference scheduling and they're kind of landlocked over there. We've been over this stuff before. But I'm eager to see how these guys translate to the SEC. Pitching in the ACC is comparable. In some years, you could argue that pitching in the ACC may be better, at least on the front line guys. I don't know if they always have the depth, but you know, the ACC could get a couple teams in the tournament, and that's what we're going to wrap up our show with. We're going to kind of talk about where we are in the NCAA tournament. The final super regional game is happening now, as Duke and Wright State are playing. But with the field is pretty much set at this point, with one exception. And I would rather be playing. I don't care what anybody says or does or thinks or whatever. You know, it's like as exciting as all this stuff is and having to deal with portal talk and that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, I hate to see players leave. But, you know, at the same time, that's just kind of part of the gig and part of what we know about college baseball these days. But as we sit here now, Duke has a 3-2 lead. Wright State can absolutely rake. And so I'm curious to see what happens when Wright State gets into that Murray State, as Murray State gets into that Blue Devil bullpen, you know. And a lot of talk that Chris Pollard, who was a candidate for our job, not a real serious candidate, but still a candidate, may be in line to get the Virginia job. You know, looks like some things have happened here in this ball game, but you know, we'll finish in. Yeah, Murray State robs a home run. Yeah. Pretty crazy. But 3-2 right now in favor of Duke, but we expect that score to change. And again, that's the last spot left. Not a lot of if necessary games remaining. And so one bracket, four team bracket is done. And it's a very interesting group. You got Arizona from the Big 12, and the Big 12 really got no respect this year by the committee, and some of that's their own fault, right? Arizona kind of got hot late. We played them early in Houston, felt like we should have won. Well, you've got Arizona and Coastal Carolina and Louisville and Oregon State in that four-team pod. Louisville is a team kind of coming off a couple of bad years. Dan McDonald has been a mainstay at Louisville. You know, State chased him when we hired Lemonis, but he's remained there. He's turned down some good jobs, and now here he is back in Omaha again. But guys, I'll be honest with you, this Oregon State team looks scary to me. I mean, they really do. You know, I watched every game against Florida State, and I know many of you really enjoyed seeing Oregon State absolutely demolish Florida State and Wes Mendez last night. And the thing that I'll say about that, Wes, if you're listening, when you don't respect the game and you don't respect your opponent, the baseball gods are watching. They are. And that kid got absolutely roped yesterday. What did he get, two-thirds of an inning, give up seven runs, and hollered and screamed and called Ross Highfield all sorts of stuff. And Florida State people were proud of that. And it came back. And so once again, Florida State will not win an AFL championship. In the bottom half, you got UCLA and LSU and Arkansas. So, of course, LSU and Arkansas are going to go head-to-head. So there's no way we have an all-SEC final, but we could have an SEC team win the AFL championship. And that's what's so intriguing about this to me. UCLA was a team that was kind of an afterthought. Some people didn't even think they may host. I thought they always would because I thought the schedule favored them down the stretch. And then now they're in Omaha, you know, for the first time in a while. And so, and I guess it was Aria Gershon from Nashville that covers Vandy that pointed out that for the first time since 1999, for the first time in the super regional format, that every team that makes Omaha this year didn't go last year. Interesting statistic. And that's the thing about the Murray State thing that I find so interesting, right? We talk about growing the game, and I really hope Murray State wins this. I do. Because this is organic growth. This is not manipulated growth like we had last year thanks to a couple of West Coast, west of the Mississippi committee members are like, hey, we got to grow the game, so let's go put a regional at UC Santa Barbara, which is a waste of everybody's time and a lot of money. And Murray State, an older team, just kind of comes out of here. They go to Oxford, win a regional, and now they forced a winner-take-all super regional final. That grows the game. And the fact that you have such parity in the Final Eight, no matter how this thing turns out, completely different. And I think maybe it's a good thing the SEC didn't dominate the Final Eight. We want people to contribute to baseball. We want people to be a part of this. But people got to feel like they're getting some return on their investment. Coastal Carolina back in Omaha since they won it for the first time in 2016, a year that we should have won it. There's a few of those, right? But when you begin to kind of work through this thing, there are some blue bloods there, and there are some teams that have won NAFL championships before. And that's what's so intriguing about that bracket with Louisville. You got Arizona Coastal and Oregon State, and then there's Louisville. And so I'll probably be pulling for Louisville, to be honest with you, at least on that side. And then on the other side, I know that like LSU and Arkansas are really our rivals in baseball. So unless Murray State makes the Final Four on that side, I'll probably pull them for Arkansas. And I'll tell you why. And I've shared this with some people, and people don't like it because you're like, Arkansas Twitter is so bad. Number one, I think Dave Van Horn's one of the best coaches in all of baseball. But Arkansas has made a tremendous financial commitment to baseball. And you want to see it pay off because I think that's good for the game. Because people can just kind of throw this up and say, well, Arkansas has spent all this money. They get all these fans there. And they've never won the big one. And I think about poor Carson Shaddy, right? He wanted to be the guy to have the historic moment. It didn't work out. He overruns the ball, and they lose to Oregon State. And that is something that's hanging over his head. And that's a tough thing to live with. And so I think for that reason, I'll be pulling for Arkansas. LSU's certainly capable of winning it. You know, LSU and Arkansas at some point are probably not corns here in bracket play. But I think it'll be one of those two that wins that bracket. And so either Arkansas or LSU will play for a national championship, I think. And if I had to call it today, I would say it's probably against Oregon State. But I think that side of the bracket's going to be a lot of fun. I think that's going to be really, really fun for us all to watch, those of us who love college baseball. But I love talking about college baseball even more when we're playing. And it's one of those things when we're, you know, when the Omaha's happening, I always watch it every year because I love it so much. But it's just not the same. And let me go ahead and share this with you if you've never heard me say it before. There is something special that kind of changes you a little bit. When you're in Omaha and you see your team take the field in the College World Series, it was very emotional for me. I mean, it really was. And I didn't cry tears or things like that. But I just felt this warmth of like, this is where I've always wanted to be. This is where I've wanted us to be. And so the next time that we go to Omaha, go ahead and plan ahead. Go ahead and make that deal right now with your significant other and say, hey, when we go to Omaha again, we're going. We may not be able to stay the whole 2 weeks, but we're going to go to Omaha. Because I'm telling you, there is a feeling really unlike any other when it comes to sports fandom, watching your team take that field. All right, if you haven't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can get signed copies of all of my sports titles. It's a great Father's Day gift. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. You can call my lovely wife, Dana, at 662-268-7601. She can answer any questions you have. And then, of course, you can book online just by downloading the True Rest app. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. We're running a promotion right now, too, so you can save a little bit of money on the annual subscription price. We're doing a lot of official visit stuff. And on Wednesday, we got 18 or 19 official visitors lined up for the weekend. We'll kind of confirm that list, and we'll give you a preview later this week on kind of who's coming in. So it'll be a big recruiting weekend this weekend and next weekend, and then things will kind of slow down a little bit. Maybe one or two things that happen in July. And before you know it, man, we're going to be right into preseason camp for football. You know, what are we, 80-something days away? 82 days away, I think? I can't remember. But nevertheless, thanks so much for your patience and your support of the show. Lo these many years. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.